I'm Emily Alphen Johnson, VPR Digital Producer. I just wanted to let you know that this episode of Vermont Edition has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. If you drive a car or a personal truck, your experience with big trucks is probably one of annoyance. They're hard to see around. They take up a lot of room. Sometimes they get really slow going up a big hill. But there's a person in that truck trying to do his or her job. And don't forget, all the stuff you own, food you eat, gas you buy to drive that car around, it was probably hauled at least in part of the way to you by a truck. The trucking industry itself has had to change with the times and adjust to changing consumer habits and economic fluctuations. Today on the show, we're going to talk about where Vermont's trucking industry is headed. We're joined now by Roland Bellavance. He's president of Bellavance Trucking, based in Barrie, and president of the Vermont Truck and Bus Association. Roland, it's nice to talk with you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being here.
You know, there is a perhaps romantic and perhaps very outdated or stereotypical picture of a truck driver. It's a guy, always a guy, on the road, pulling long hours, maybe too long, stopping to sleep in his cab, eating crappy food from whatever truck stop he manages to find. What does the reality actually look like?
Well, with today's newer generation, the drivers are much more professional. With the advent of the electronic logs that'll be coming up and mandatory here at the end of this year, the hours, the long hours or the longer hours are probably going to be a thing of the past, and that they'll all be on electronics. And when the clock's up, it's up, and they'll take their break and go from there. So the day of the, you know, driver driving till his eyes close are quickly coming to an end for the safety factors involved.
And what about the guy feature? Is it still always a guy?
No, we actually have many women that drive for us, even that do a great job over the road. They're always on time. They're very courteous. You know, they treat the customers very well and actually do a very good job for us.
Is the food still bad at the truck stops?
Well, they've tried even like Truck Stops of America, the TAs that you see around. They've realized that in their restaurants, they've had to change because of the motoring public in general. Most places are all fast food, whether it be Subway or McDonald's or Burger King and that type of thing. So the Truck Stops of America and Petros and those guys of the world have had to make a lot better food available, salad bars, buffets, that type of stuff, because it's not just truckers anymore that stop in there. You have a lot of the RVs and a lot of the motoring public that stop. So the food has gotten quite a bit better.
Nonetheless, it's still a challenging job. What are some of the challenges of being a driver, especially a long-haul driver?
Well, the hours are a bit of an inconsistency sometimes, being on the long-haul type setup, whereas you're allowed to drive 11 hours a day and then work a total of 14. So drive 11 and work at some other part of it for 3. So then you have to take 10 hours off. So if you think about the 24-hour clock, you may be starting your day a little bit earlier, a little bit earlier, a little bit earlier each time. And many of the deliveries, you have to drive through the night to be somewhere for first thing in the morning delivery. So it can be a situation with some odd hours in some of the freight situations.
You mentioned this clock, the electronic clock that is, as I understand it, not required in Vermont quite yet, but is in some places, right?
Well, the Owner Operators Association has actually taken it to court, and that they don't want it at all. But a lot of your larger trucking companies, and we in fact have started to go that route as well. But it's the Owner Operators Association is taking it to the Supreme Court, I think later this week. So if the Supreme Court does not hear the case, then it's law at the end of this year. Everybody who has to have a logbook will have to have some form of electronic logs.
And why would that not be a good thing? I mean, I understand from the business perspective the desire, and especially in the past, and this is part of what it's tried to combat, is that idea that you just keep driving, you got to get to the place that you got to get to, and you know, even if you're tired, just get there. But what's the downside of having that sort of electronic monitoring that says your time's up, you got to stop?
Well, most of the carriers in the United States are 12 trucks or less, most of the companies. And it's an expensive proposition. It could cost up to $2,000 a unit for the initial buy, $40 a month for rental time. You have to have software in the office to monitor. So it's kind of an expensive proposition that many small carriers just feel is a breach of their privacy and just a bigger expense of cost of doing business.
Do you have to stop right when the clock tells you your time's up, no matter where you are, no matter how close you are?
Well, the theory behind them is to let you know how much time you have left or available and to give the driver some time to find a place to pull over, a safe place to pull over, and take the 10-hour rest. Some of the bigger companies won't let their guys go a minute over the clock, but I think like in our case, we don't do that. We want the guys to be definitely in a safe thing. But the idea is to make guys plan ahead a little more, whether it be plan ahead for traffic or plan ahead where they want to stop and then therefore stop. So to go to the last minute sometimes, it's not an everyday occurrence.
We got a note from one driver who says, these men and women are drug and alcohol free. They have to know so much information about their tractor, trailer, and their load. When they get a ticket, they have to pay the fine in most cases. They have to constantly be vigilant for pedestrians and bad drivers, animals, you name it. They don't get to be tired or have a bad day. They don't get paid enough for the responsibility they have. They don't get paid enough for the knowledge they have. They probably don't get the respect they deserve either. Roland, what do you think about that?
Well, it's come a long ways in the last 5 to 6 years. It's hard to put a correct number on what is the correct number, whether it be hourly or weekly or yearly or that type of thing. In this job, you're definitely on your own. You have to make those vital decisions every day to get the job done. And in today's world, you know, in our company or actually in the industry, you know, you try to tell somebody that they're going to be making or grossing $1,000 a week. That's what you shoot for. Is $1,000 a week. Now, whether that's enough or not, nobody knows. It's a tough one. It can go up from there. It can go down from there, depending on the hours or the time you put in. But it's definitely a different type of scenario with the driver being on his own.
We got a note from Joshua who shared with us some of the economics as he sees it. He says a truck driver gets compensation through either hourly, weight of the load, commission, or by the mile. Some over-the-road or OTR truckers get paid as low as 36 cents a mile. And if you run 3,000 miles a week, you bring home before taxes roughly $1,000. But most OTR drivers don't run that many miles. Average drivers run about 2,200 a week because seniority drivers get the long-haul loads. Most are gone for 2 or 3 weeks without seeing family, doctor's appointments, and don't get more than 2 or 3 days off between before they go back on the road. Some drivers love the OTR, and I applaud them, but the real problem is the shortness of drivers because of these factors, not to mention the risk of high-ticket fines for mostly something out of our control, like company equipment not making repairs. And we get cited for car accidents, even though most accidents are not our fault. But we are held to a higher standard than your average daily commuter, and our responsibility is to protect those around us. Some companies have raised pay upwards of 45 cents a mile, but this is because the companies were forced due to the fact that trucks literally move the economy and drivers are desperately needed with our ever-growing economy. So if trucks stop, the economy stops, period. Roland, do you struggle to get drivers?
Well, you know, we're constantly looking for drivers in that, you know, it does change if somebody gets married or someone has kids or someone decides they've had enough of on the road. So we're always looking for drivers. We have a solid core, you know, a strong core of drivers, good drivers, professional drivers. But you always have that 10 or 12% around the edges where guys come and go or they decide they don't want to be long haul anymore. They want to be short haul or they want to be intermediate haul. So in talking about the changes the industry has to make, finding the right job for the driver is the biggest question to try to fit their schedule. So it's always evolving, always changing. And it's a people person job. So you try to fit the person with the job to make sure you can keep them. Because if they're not happy, then they're not going to stay. They're going to go somewhere else.
What do you do at Bellavance Trucking?
You mean for freight or where
yeah,
we
like
go?
All of the above.
Well, we started back in the 50s hauling granite for the granite industry out of Barrie to monument dealers, primarily from Illinois east, the Carolinas north. So we're lucky in that most of our guys are home weekends. You know, they get home Friday morning, Friday afternoon, then head out again Sunday and Monday, that type of situation. So, but we do have some guys that want to be gone long that will go coast to coast. And then we have guys that want to be home every night. So once again, we have to match the schedule with what those guys want to do.
And you said you started with granite, but I assume things have changed over the many decades since then. So what are you mostly hauling these days?
Well, granite's still a primary source. Then we were growing with Green Mountain Coffee. We're an in-house carrier for them. And we've since got into the refrigerator trailer business, and we've been working with Cabot Cheese. So those are primarily our three biggest products right now. And we've had to diversify over the years because of the way the manufacturing world is changing.
We got a note from Ryan who says, one concern I have is bad drivers cutting trucks off. This is our office, and we just want to get our job done and go home safely. Some days it's a real challenge. Roland, I've heard that from other people in the industry, too, that they feel like the truck, you know, people don't like the big truck on the road with them. And instead of sort of railing silently against that big truck, they often operate in a way that is actually dangerous to themselves in their small car and to the truck. What are best practices for how to deal with and be a good neighbor to a truck that you're sharing the road with, a big truck?
In our training scenarios, we try to tell our drivers to try to stay 5 miles an hour below the speed of everybody else. Our trucks happen to be governed for 68 miles an hour as maximum speed, but if they could stay 5 miles an hour behind how the speed of the traffic, then they kind of avoid those situations.
People don't get annoyed by that, by the truck in the lane going 5 miles an hour slower than they want to?
Well, you know, it is what it is. You know, I mean, they definitely, on a two-lane road, I mean, it really doesn't matter because not that many people are going to go by you. But in this situation, we're talking about interstates, you know, whether it be Vermont or downcountry or whatever. But rules of the road, if you could stay 5 miles an hour under, then the traffic is going to keep going by you, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
As an industry, we've tried to, the newer trucks now, a lot of them have situations where the truck will automatically brake itself if somebody gets too close to the front of the truck or going too fast into an interchange or something. The truck will automatically adjust the brakes to try to keep from rolling over. But it is an industry problem with cars cutting trucks off. Many of the DOT departments are aware of that. Even here in Vermont, the Vermont DOT has some ride-alongs where they'll put an officer in a truck in some of the busy parts of the state, i.e. in the Burlington area, for example, where they're observing the cars operating around the big trucks and issue cars tickets for bothering a truck or doing something that's not safe. So they're aware of the situation. The whole industry is aware of it. We've also put a lot of in-cab cameras now. So if somebody, a driver has to slam on his brakes or whatever, it'll record 15 to 20 seconds of the time lapse before and after the brake situation.
Hmm.
So there's no more he said, she said. It's let's look at the video and see what actually happened.
Let's go to Ed, who's calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Ed. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Speaking as a grandson of a truck driver, a long time ago, I read in Reader's Digest an article which was truck drivers' advice to drivers generally. I remember three of their principles. Get the big picture. Keep your eyes moving. Always have an out. I wondered if you had anything you would add to that list.
Well, actually, the industry, UPS was a big advocate of this, but it's actually called the Smith system, the Smith driving system. And those three things, I believe, are in the Smith driving system. And it's mostly keep your eyes moving, look further ahead, leave yourself an out. Make sure you got plenty of time to brake. But if you go look on the internet or something as the Smith driver system, you'll see exactly what you're talking about, and you are correct. Those are three things that I think you'll find in that system.
Roland, when I was a kid, I used to love it when my dad would drive slow, because we'd be on the highway at night and a truck would go by and my dad would flash his lights, flash his high beams at the truck when it was safe for the truck to pull in, and then the truck would flash all of the lights it possibly could, sort of as a thank you. And as a kid, I thought that was like the most wonderful thing that could ever happen on the road. Is that recommended? Should you let a truck know when it's safe for them to pull back in?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. It's still a practice in today's world. You don't see it so much anymore. I do have to admit that. But there is a special switch in the tractor that does that flashing of the clearance lights on the trailer. You're absolutely right.
Let's go to Bruce calling in from Cornish, New Hampshire. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for calling.
Well, you're welcome. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. What are your thoughts?
Well, what prompted me to call was the very first statement your guest said, where they were much more professional. I've been a professional truck driver since the early 90s, 90, 89, I can't even remember. But, well, when I got my first CDL, it was a 1 instead of an ABC, if that gives you any indication. I've noticed actually just the opposite. This is my own opinion, but the smarter, quote unquote, the trucks get, it seems, the dumber, I don't know that's the right term, but because the drivers today don't have to control the truck as much as they used to. But that aside, the technical skills, It's a problem of consideration. It's a bunch of C's, I always say. Consideration, compassion, camaraderie. Back in those days, if you had a problem on the highway, the best thing you wanted to see was a semi coming to you, because that guy was going to stop. He was going to help you. He was going to stay with you until you got rolling, or at least help was coming again.
And you don't find that happens anymore, Bruce?
I do not. I absolutely do not. And the turning point to me, and again, I understand that this is a product of the times, when there's twice as many people literally on the roads as there was when I began. But the turning point for me was a story I heard many years ago about a Southern driver who actually kidnapped a broke down motorist and kept her in the back of his truck for weeks, if not months. I don't remember the details anymore.
Well, Bruce, thanks for your call. I appreciate hearing from you. Roland, what do you think about this idea that, well, there are a couple of things that Bruce brought up, but let's go to the first point first, and then we'll take a break and come back. But this idea that, you know, as trucks get more technological and there are more things that are sort of taken out of the driver's control, that even despite stricter licensing with commercial driver's licenses and other things like that, that the drivers maybe aren't as savvy as they used to be.
Well, you know, as an industry, we actually talk about that a lot. And some of the examples that we've heard in roundtable discussion, and here's an easy, a simple one with the advent of the automatic transmissions for these big rigs, in that you think about it, you don't have manual transmissions in your cars, in your pickups, in your personal vehicles anymore. Today's generation, that's all they've ever known is automatic transmissions. We talk about in the older days when there were a lot of farms around, kids grew up on the farms, they were mechanically inclined. Today, kids aren't really mechanically inclined anymore. I mean, myself, I can't work on my car, I can't work on my pickup. You see what I mean? So It's harder to be mechanically inclined in today's world, just the way things have changed. So our industry is changing along with that, because that you don't find that mechanical knowledge anymore in the general public. And a lot of times we attribute it to the loss of farms. You just don't have as many farmers around where kids started driving tractors when they were 10. You know what I mean? That type of thing. It's just a thing of the past.
So when Bruce says he thinks truckers have gotten dumber, maybe we've just all gotten dumber.
Well, I wouldn't call it dumber. I would say that there's different distractions on the road today that require their attention. I mean, I'm probably a good example as anybody. If I think I don't know where I'm going, what's the first thing I do is I use my GPS. So I don't get lost or I don't have to think about it. I just rely on the GPS. So the technology in today's world has made it so now we're concentrating on other things. And I understand where he's coming from, and I do agree with what he's saying, but it's a total different type of distraction in today's world than it was back when he started driving.
Before we leave Bruce's comments, Bruce was saying that one of the things that he can point to as a sort of maybe a split in how people feel about truckers is some of the stories that have come out that are really negative. You mentioned a kidnapping, and you know there have been stories in the news over the years of bad things that truckers have done, really bad things, and that sort of paints the industry in a bad light. How do you combat that?
Well, we as an industry, we're trying to combat it with the good stuff that trucking companies do rather than the bad stuff. As an example, supporting some of the local softball or baseball teams, basketball teams, raising money for the cancer research in the world. So the industry tries to do stuff like that rather than focus on the negativity, because when there's a tractor trailer crash, it's usually a pretty good sight, makes good news, makes good video. And as an industry, we're not as good as we should be in advertising the good stuff. There's many, many drivers that we see in the trade journals that have driven 3, 4, 5 million miles in the course of their career and never had a chargeable accident. And as an industry, we should be spending more time celebrating those events instead of the bad crashes or the bad things that less than 1% of our population does to make us look bad.
Elizabeth writes, my husband and I drove across the country for nearly 2 months this winter, more than 7,000 miles. Nearly all of the truckers we shared the road with were excellent drivers, looking ahead, signaling, planning around the many not very good car drivers. The few bad truck drivers are a true menace because of their size and speed, but we're probably alive today because they are the rare exception. And let's go to Peter, calling from Albany, New York. Hi, Peter. Go right ahead.
Hi. How you doing?
Great.
Just calling to talk about the new and the old school truck drivers that are out here today.
So talking about the difference between new school and old school, are you one of them?
I'm what I'd like to call the new old school. My father was a truck driver, and his father was a truck driver. Come from a long family, you know, always wanted to come out here on an open road and start driving truck. But, you know, once I'm out here and they have all the sensors on the trucks and they have all the safety items to make truckers better, I agree with the other caller. They've actually made them dumber. But the bad thing is the schoolings these days aren't exactly the way they should be. I had gone to a school that was just pretty much passing drivers along to get them to pass the test to get their Class A instead of actually teaching them how to drive.
Yeah, Peter, let me put that to Roland. What kind of training do drivers actually have to go through to get their CDL?
Well, they've had to go to, I think, now 40 hours of class time, and then I don't know if it might be 20 or 40 hours of road time as well. But in talking to many of the different schools here in the state, you know, we kind of asked that same question as he did about, you know, how come they're not doing this or how come they're not doing that? And basically the answers that I'm getting is, look, our job is to get these drivers their CDL, and then it's your job as the company owner or safety department to finish training the driver to your specific needs. And in a way, it kind of makes sense because there's so many different types of trucks, so many different types of operations that ultimately it's up to the employer to finish training per se to have the driver that he's looking for in the end.
We got a note from Sean who says, I was a small-time trucker for a meat company in the 2000s, delivering whole carcasses to the finest restaurants in New York City. No logbooks, no time limits, no worker protections. But maybe it was all worth it for the looks you got, trotting down Park Avenue with a couple of goats over your shoulder. Ran into Regis Philbin once outside the ABC building. I was lugging a 150-pound pig head forward and couldn't resist saying, it was his final answer. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate that. And let's go to Don calling from Underhill. Hi, Don. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I worked at UPS for 26 years and recently retired, so I have a lot of truckers as friends, even if I don't have trucking experience. And I'm concerned what the heck is going to happen to them. I mean, they used to have unions to represent them, and now they're all independent. What happens when self-driving trucks come?
Don, yeah, thanks for the call. Self-driving trucks, Roland, I hear a lot about this as a concern, and people are wondering, what happens to truck drivers if we get to self-driving trucks?
Well, I think right now there's a lot of people talking about them. I think what's going to happen is you may see on out in the West more than here in the East Coast. I can't imagine a platoon of trucks going down the New Jersey Turnpike or the thruway into New York City. But you're always going to have what they call the final mile delivery guys. I think, you know, the industry's talking about maybe layoffs 20, 30, 40 years from now. But I just think the economy will grow enough that it'll keep whoever wants to be a driver driving. Because like I said, there's just thousands of different types of operations. And the platooning is only one part of the truck driving scenario. You see what I mean?
Yeah. So the platooning would be sort of a fleet of self-driving trucks headed down the highway?
Yeah. It might be one driver that's hooked, connected to one or two other trucks behind him so that he could get on the interstate and go from one exit to the final exit and then pull in like you see off the interstates where they park the double trailers and stuff like that. And then you're going to need another driver to come in and make the local deliveries or that type of stuff. So the platooning is only going to cover one section of the industry. And the way it looks right now, there's going to be plenty of other stuff, whether it be dump trucks or beer trucks delivering to the stores or UPS trucks delivering to the homes and stuff. So I think the economy will more than absorb whatever they think they're going to lose on the long haul side.
Let's go to Bill calling in from Rutland. Hey, Bill, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm involved with a company that owns 6 over-the-road trucks, and there's one comment and one question. There's a lot of truck haters out there that make it awful dangerous for trucks as well as other cars. And the second one is a comment. Woodstock seems to be horrible as far as trucks go and ticketing them. They want people to go way around it with a lot of additional miles and added costs, especially for independent drivers.
Yeah, Bill, thanks for the call. You know, Roland, certainly in a place like Vermont where most of the roads in the state are smaller roads and there are several sort of pinch points where there are trucks going through small towns and there have been workarounds to try to build outside the town for the trucks. But there's some tension between truck drivers and communities and community members.
Yeah, Vermont's got a couple of them. The Notch is one that you talked about earlier, and Woodstock's another. As an example, in Woodstock, you've got that really sharp corner right in the heart of the downtown. And then you drive in the truck through Main Street, which is their historic part of the village and stuff. But as a small state, there's really no way we're going to get around it. So as an industry, we try to live with it the best we can.
We got a note from Lori who says, regarding Bruce's call, the rigs my sons drive to haul cars are not automatic, requiring less skill. As professional drivers, they see car drivers as far less aware and competent. In regards to drivers pulling up and pulling over to help, yes, things have changed. There are many documented events, though, of truck drivers pulling over to help only to be assaulted and or robbed. So, you know, interesting stuff here, Roland. Bottom line, it sounds like you think there will always be a role for trucks in our society. So how do we need to think about getting along with one another, truck drivers and car drivers and everybody in between?
Well, the trucking industry, like I said earlier, is definitely a people person industry. You're forever dealing with people, whether it be in the office, on the road, your customers. So it's always going to be a people person job, and it's all about attitude, whether it's the driver's attitude or the car driver's attitude or the customer's attitude. So we try and just keep preaching that it's a lot easier to smile than it is to frown.
Roland Bellavance is president of Bellavance Trucking, based in Barrie, and president of the Vermont Truck and Bus Association. Roland, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.